Welcome to the Ignite Your Life podcast. Here we interview successful people who are living a life filled with adventure, excitement, and fun. Learn where they've been. Explore where they are going. See what gets them out of bed in the morning. Find out what drives them. We will go through their lowest points. We will look at the opportunities and possibilities that are now presenting to them. Come on a journey of ignition. I'm your host, Leanne Blaney. For more information, go to ignitepodcast.com. Let's ignite. Tracy Lawrence is an educator, innovator, disruptor, and entrepreneur. Her journey as a serial caregiver led her to create Grand Family Planning. Tracy shows clients the power of being proactive in light of the certainty that illness and death will be a part of every person's life. She saves lives and legacies in a climate that lengthens human lives without regard to quality of life. Her team-based approach simplifies a daunting and complex process. Tracy's book is Dementia Sucks. Hi, Tracy. Welcome to the Ignite Your Life podcast.
Hi, Leanne.
I'm really excited to share your story. So shall we get started?
I would love to.
Excellent. All right. Do you want to tell us a bit about where you are now? What's actually happening for you right now?
Well, Leanne, the really exciting thing for me is the publication of my book, which is called Dementia Sucks. It's my story about the journey that I took with my parents. Both of them got sick and succumbed to dementia 10 years apart. And when I was taking care of my mother, I started a journal / blog because while I was doing it for therapeutic reasons, because I needed an outlet, my mom was really making me crazy when I was taking care of her. I thought that if I blogged and people, you know, got something out of what I learned, it would be a win. So I kept the blog for 5 years, and during that time, I got 600 followers, which, you know, it's not enormous, but it's a nice size following. And my mom passed away in April of 2015, and I stopped writing the blog. I took a year off, and I went back to the blog posts a year after I left them, and I was able to read them as a reader would, as opposed to the way, you know, an author would be reviewing their own work. And because of that separation, I was really able to read it and enjoy it, and I liked what I read. And I thought, you know what, the book that everyone's been telling me I have to write is already written. It's here. I just need to massage it, work with it. And as it turns out, my publisher agreed with me, and I was able to get the book published.
Wow.
So that's been very exciting.
Yeah, yeah. So with your story, where have you actually been to get to that point? Like you said that your mother got dementia. But what actually mm-hmm. happened to lead up to that point?
Ah, well, you know, in my adult life, I was mostly a graphic artist. I'm married. I've been with my husband for 20, it's going to be 27 years in October. And my parents were in Florida, retired, and I thought everything was okay with them. And then we went to go visit them. I live in northern New Jersey, for those who are listening. And so I lived, you know, well, it's about 2,000 miles away from them. So I was on the phone with them a lot, but I didn't get to see them that often. And then I got to see my dad. And I saw that he was not as well as he had been presenting himself. And it was kind of alarming, actually, because he had a lot of things wrong with him. And the worst of those things that were wrong with him was that he had dementia. So he got sick, and within about a year, he passed away. And then my mom was living in Florida on her own. And my husband and I would visit with her and check in on her. You know, we didn't take vacations anymore. We would go to Florida and check in with mom and make sure that she was doing okay, that, you know, she was getting her shopping done, and that, you know, she was, you know, she had everything that she needed. And over time, it became clear that things weren't so good with her either. And her doctor finally said, you know, you really shouldn't be living by yourself any longer. So I offered my mother the opportunity to come and live with us. And she thought that was a lovely offer. So she did. And that became my, you know, the real intense part of the journey. Because while I'd had some exposure to some new things when it came to my father's situation, it opened the door, but there was a whole lot more lurking that I had no exposure to, having to deal with long-term care insurance and senior illnesses and doctors and insurance and, you know, having to advocate for another person. So, you know, and all of those things were life-changing for me. And it was intense and it was informative. And when I got to a point where my mom was being cared for in a group home, I was able to have a little more time for myself and to think of what I wanted to have happen next in my life. And having learned all that I'd learned, I didn't want that knowledge to go to waste. And I also knew that there were millions of people out there in the world who were going to need to know what I had just learned. So I started working on some ways of being able to put my knowledge to good use to help save other people.
Mm, yeah. And you said there's been a couple of tipping points for change there. Like mm-hmm. when your mother was in the home and you started thinking about it, were they like lightning bolt moments for you, or were they like slow rumbles that think, well, I can do something else. I can get my, you know, get some sort of information out there for others as well.
Well, there were a lot of shocks. You know, you don't realize how, well, things may be different where you are. I don't know. But in the United States, healthcare is a business and insurance is a business. And so we, the people are being, we are put in a position to have our lives be controlled to a great extent by these businesses. And it's frightening. So it was upsetting to me that when I would think of what would my mother, or what do people like my mother do when they don't have a child like me to advocate for them? What happens to them? And I've met so many people on my journey who have had their lives changed because they've had that thunderclap moment. I made the acquaintance of a woman who sold long-term care insurance, and she had had a brother who had cancer, and she had sold him a long-term care policy. He had so much difficulty getting his claim processed that he gave up. And, you know, and she, his sister, also his agent, you know, said, what's going on? And he said, I can't do it anymore. It's too difficult. And she said, that's ridiculous. And she, like, you know, she jumped in and she tried to help him, and she soon discovered it wasn't ridiculous and they were giving him an extremely hard time. Here she was thinking that she was providing something really great for her brother. And not to say that she, you know, I mean, her intentions were obviously honorable. But once you find out what the actual mechanisms are and the difficulty associated with having to deal with an entity that's trying to keep you from getting money that you're entitled to for something that, you know, something that you've paid for, it's very frustrating. And she actually started a business helping people file long-term care claims. So, you know, and it's those kinds of things are really shocking. And I also before my parents got dementia, I had no idea the depths and the complexity of what someone in cognitive decline is going through. And my mother became a violent person. She was, I called her a geriatric delinquent, because she got thrown out of a rehab facility for threatening people with knives. This little old lady in her 80s who was very previously demure, would never hurt anybody. You know, she felt threatened. So she was in the dining room and she picked up a stainless steel knife and she's like, "You want a piece of me?" So, and it got to a point where I didn't know what to do with her anymore because the facilities generally do not want to deal with someone who is violent, who could potentially present a liability problem, who could potentially hurt their staff, hurt other residents. So it becomes a problem. And then you have medication as solution, which is disturbing too, because all the medications that they offer people, like my mother, are extremely dangerous for them. You look it up on a website and it's a warning, Risperdal should not be used in a person who is an elderly person with dementia. It could be fatal. And I'm looking at this and I'm like, what? But you talk to the doctors and then they make you realize, it's like, look, we don't have a lot of answers. So here are your choices. You can leave your mother in a psychiatric hospital for the rest of her natural life, where we can keep an eye on her and strap her down to the bed when she becomes violent. Oh, that's not happening. Or you can allow us to figure out which cocktail of medications we can give her, which will keep her calm so she can be returned to a more social setting. So I said, okay, I get it. We're going to go for the social setting. And because we did that, she was able to have some quality of life for the last few years of her life. But all these things are so shocking. And until you get there, you don't realize what these things are and how they're going to affect you and how they're going to impact your loved one and you and your family.
Yeah.
So.
So there seems like lots of challenges, that you come up with along the way. And you were talking about that brother of that woman who sold the insurance policies, just giving up. Were there any challenges that you came along the way where you just felt like throwing in the towel? Think it was all too hard?
Oh yeah. There were a number of times when my mom, when she was during that period where she was being moved around, she had been thrown out of rehab. She was in the psychiatric hospital. She was returned finally to her assisted living facility, and within 2 days, I was getting calls. Your mother is trying to run away from home, and you have to hire someone to watch her 24/7. So that's an extremely expensive proposition, and I found a different setting for her that was a much smaller place with much fewer residents, where her behaviors could be controlled environmentally. And so initially when I moved her there, I thought, oh, this is great. And she had a little romance like very shortly after she moved in, and it was really cute. The gentleman who she was involved with was actually didn't have dementia, but he thought she was adorable. And his family was about to move him to another facility for more high functioning people, but he didn't want to go because he was crazy about my mom. All of that being said, within a few weeks of that arrival, she was miserable because she was much higher functioning than most of the other residents in the facility. And so she was upset and she was crying and she was begging me to go back to the other place. And so here I am thinking, I've made the right decision, but I am also feeling like I have my sixth grader well, I don't know if this correlates, but like in the first grade, where she's just like she's surrounded with much less able people, and she was very unhappy. But after some investigation and talking with a social worker who worked with her, and I was and I called the Alzheimer's Association for support, because I just didn't know what to do anymore. I was like, running out of ideas. And the social worker said to me, "Do you agree that your mother's in needs to be in this place?" And I said, "Yeah, absolutely. I mean, she needs the kind of care that this place can provide." And he said, "Well, then she's where she needs to be." And the ironic thing is that because she was in the right setting, her symptoms were being arrested. So she was functioning at a higher level. So because they were succeeding at being able to treat her well, she was unhappy with where she was because she was operating at a higher level. So, you know, and all these things were very, very challenging.
Yeah, definitely. So now that you've moved on and you've written the book and that, what sort of keeps you putting one foot in front of the other? Do you have a big vision for the book or getting the message out there?
Oh, yes. Thank you. Great question. Yes, absolutely. I have been on a mission to get my book into the hands of very high-level influencers. And I heard from Bill Gates's office last week, and they thanked me for sending him the book. He hasn't read it yet, but fingers crossed.
Yeah.
I actually had the book put in the hands of Maria Shriver, so I'm very excited about that. Her production people asked for my bio, so I'm hopeful that something will come of that. I'm doing a lot of talks. I'm offering myself up as a professional speaker. I'm doing a number of different talks and events. I partner with Global Women for Wellbeing, which is an organization that supports business women, and particularly because women do the lion's share of caregiving, and many of them have businesses or they have careers, and so this organization helps to support these women with classes and meetings and various different educational tools. I have a business called Grand Family Planning, where I help families in a very holistic level. I have a team of complementary professionals where we work with the family and we figure out what needs to be done for the family in order to make sure that everyone is protected. I work with attorneys and care managers and doctors and Medicaid professionals and Medicare professionals and a whole slew of really smart people so that we can help families to figure out what they need to do. And then once we figure out what they need to do, we actually help them implement. I'm also developing a course to teach people how to be healthcare advocates. So because we're going to have a flood of single women in the near future, and it's already happening. But you know, we live a long time, and we sometimes outlive everybody. So you know, and you get to a certain point where you really need someone in your life who can serve as your advocate. So if God forbid you land in the hospital, there's someone you can call who knows what your wishes are and who will fight for you to get you what you want and deserve, so that you're not left alone and that you get the care you want and deserve.
Yeah.
So I'm doing a few things.
Just a few. I'm thinking that. I was going to ask you what sort of possibilities have been opening up for you, but so many. You've just told us like heaps of things that are happening for you, which is, you know, really exciting. So what else is exciting about the future that you're looking forward to?
Well, I am also creating a caregiver community. It's going to be global, and caregivers and the people they care for are going to be able to come in, and we're going to provide them with health monitoring systems which will enable us to monitor their vitals and help them to make really good health care decisions, so that not just the person who's being cared for, but the caregiver is also being given guidance. Because the really terrible thing, Leanne, is that especially in the caregiving sphere, caregivers are in peril. 50% of family caregivers of people with dementia die before the people they're taking care of.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a big stat. Yeah.
Yeah, it's huge. And then if you're a spouse and you're taking care of your spouse who has dementia, that number grows to 67%. So we those people are in peril, and then of course the people they're caring for are in desperate straits, because who's going to take care of them?
Mm.
So I want to create this awareness in people so that they understand what the dangers are in caregiving, that there is a likely caregiving event coming somewhere in their life. If they have family, if they have people they care about, then the likelihood that they're going to be doing something in that sphere is very high. And, you know, because we're living longer and more of us are getting chronic diseases for a very long time and dementia for a very long time, we need to live as if that's going to be part of our picture. Mm. And if it's not, well, hooray. But if it is, look, your life is going to take, you know, your life is going to be difficult, but it will, you'll be much better served if you prepare for it than if you don't.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's so wonderful, the work that you're doing. It's so needed. I've definitely seen it here in Australia as well. I know our health system is different and we're very lucky here, but I do see all those issues coming up with the living longer and, you know, dementia becoming more prevalent. Like, well, it seems becoming more prevalent. Like, you see it more and more. Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. Let's have a change in pace and do the speed round.
Okay.
All right. What's your favorite book?
Depends on if it's fiction or nonfiction. My favorite fiction book is The Stand by Stephen King. I've read it a bunch of times. I don't know. It's like, it's one of those books that I can get really swept up in. Yeah. And I love that book. And nonfiction, there's a book called Thinking Slow and Fast. There's a Thinking Fast and Slow by Dan Kahneman. It's a great book, and it shows studies of like how people actually think. And you know how we're always saying go with your gut. Turns out that the gut's not always right, because we're actually going through this little Rolodex in our heads looking for something similar to this thing that we're looking at, and we make decisions based on erroneous ideas. So I really enjoyed that book. It's not an easy read, but it was very worthwhile because it helped me to. Well, pushed me to write my book, actually.
Oh, wow. Excellent. Do you have a mentor figure that's helped you the most?
Yes. My mentor, I actually worked with her many years ago. Kathleen Cuvelier was my singing teacher. And when I met her, I had horrendous stage fright. I could not get up in front of people and speak. I would just, you know, crumble, and my face would go red and my voice would shake. When I met her, I wanted to learn how to sing well, because I had two distinct voices and I wanted to be able to blend them. And she insisted that I perform, and I fought her on it. And she said, if you don't arrange to perform sometime in the near future, then I won't work with you anymore. So she encouraged me to take classes and to overcome my stage fright. And I bless her every day of my life, because I could not do a particle of what I do without having gone through that process and overcome my stage fright. Yeah. I do sing. I sing with rock and roll bands also, I should mention. So.
Oh, awesome.
I thank her for that.
What daily ritual works best for you?
Getting up and getting right to work. So yeah, I just like to, you know, because I work out of my home, I hit the ground running. I'm excited every day, and I go after it.
Oh, I love it. What's your favorite food?
Chinese. I love Sichuan Chinese food. That's a favorite of mine. I like spicy, and I like.
Yum. Do you like the country or the city?
I actually love both. I live in the country. I live in a town called Ringwood, New Jersey. But one of the things that's awesome about it is I am 40 miles from Midtown Manhattan. So when I really need my city fix, I can go on in and get it. So I have the best of both worlds.
Oh, excellent. What's the biggest piece of advice you can give to others to help them make change in their life?
What I advocate for is I always recommend, when people are sitting on the fence, I recommend that you picture yourself 5 years ahead and think, would I regret having done this or not having done this? And I find that if you frame your ideas in those terms of regret, that helps you to crystallize things. And I also use that. I always say that I want to make it to the finish line with as little regret as possible. So, you know, anytime I have a difficult decision to make, I think, you know, okay, I'm on my deathbed. Do I regret having done it or do I regret having not done it? And that the answer becomes pretty clear most of the time.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love that one.
Thank you.
All right, last question. If you had a time machine, what would you go back and do differently or tell your former self?
I would go back to when I was six and tell my six-year-old self that all those bullies who are bugging you are jerks and they're just jealous of you. And you'll outgrow it. So, and you'll have the last laugh. So stop worrying about that stuff.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Well, thank you so much for your valuable time today, Tracy, and sharing your story. I really appreciate it. Would you like to give us the best place to contact you, and we'll end it there?
Oh, sure. Well, if you want to email me, my email address is grandfamilyplanning@gmail.com. And you can also go to my website. It's grandfamilyplanning.com. And I have lots of great resources, and you can contact me right off of that website.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Leanne. It was such a pleasure. I'm glad we got to meet and have this conversation.
Igniters, Tracy is on an amazing path of advocating for caregivers and those who have difficulty speaking for themselves. She believes that when you make it to the finish line, let it be with as little regret as possible. You can contact Tracy through her website, grandfamilyplanning.com. To learn how to live an adventurous life so you have no regrets, go to my website, leannblaney.com.